All right, good morning, everyone. I call this regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. It is 10:05 a.m. on Wednesday, September 23rd, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotchis. Also present with me are Commissioner Julie Fedorchak and Commissioner Randy Christman, so we have a quorum. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchak?
I would just say yesterday we had pretty extensive discussions with representatives from MISO and SPP, the two regional transmission organizations that serve North Dakota and all the utilities and cooperatives in our state. It was a great discussion about a lot of the issues that they're dealing with related to the transformation of the grid, the rapid transformation of the grid, and the extensive conversion of new facilities and retirement of old traditional fossil fuel facilities. There's so many issues to work through with them in tandem. It's a shared responsibility. We have responsibility for reliability, but all of our companies operate in that market, in those markets, and market rules have a big influence on company actions. So I thought it was a productive day. It's something we need to continue working really hard on and closely on, and making sure that we are doing our best to defend North Dakota's positions on a lot of these issues, which, quite honestly, they differ from other states in a lot of regards. So all the more reason why we need to stay engaged. And we did just notice a meeting for after immediately following this meeting with John Weida, the head of the state's transmission authority. He's also watching these issues and working on them on behalf of the Industrial Commission and the governor, so it's important for us to coordinate with John and keep the information flowing back and forth with him, too, so that we're all kind of on the same page on behalf of North Dakota. So otherwise, that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Christman.
That was a really good, two good updates yesterday from the RTOs, and you're right, the impact of decisions by the RTOs are increasingly important for all states, and so that was good, and I look forward to hearing from John later. The only other comment I have is that one of my motions when my agenda pops up is one that I'm just super excited about. So often our decisions involve weighing pros and cons or those kinds of things, and there's bad that comes with the good. And today we have an example of something that over the course of almost two decades now I've gotten to monitor, and it has worked out really the way things ought to be. And so I'm excited to get to my agenda later on and present to you some new information. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Christman. You know, just actually, when you were both talking about the meetings yesterday, I think the updates were extremely good, but I was particularly impressed with the cost allocation process or approach, I should say, the cost allocation approach. That SPP outlined in their presentation and looking at benefit to end users for the different generation types coming online. And that might be present to some extent in MISO as well, because I don't sit at those meetings. But I think that's fair. I think it's a sensible approach to look at that end benefit equation, because ultimately, while we are an exporter of energy, electrons, electricity, we also want to make sure that we're being treated fairly and that we're just not along for the ride when as this transformation of the grid takes place, and that we're, you know, doing what we can on behalf of our constituents, the North Dakota, you know, citizens of North Dakota whom we serve. So I thought it was an interesting discussion, and a lot of things were going through my mind after it occurred. But I know it's complex, but we'll see where the future takes us as this unwinds.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just...
Yes.
The beneficiary pays concept for transmission, I think, is pretty common throughout the RTO world. The challenge gets into defining what the benefits are, and I'm sure that's an issue for SPP as well as it is for MISO, and lots of different people have different ideas about what a benefit is and who should be included in when it comes to paying for things. There's a lot of eagerness to say you don't benefit by some groups and to push those benefits on somebody else to pay. So that's where the big battle comes, is it seems like it would be clear who the beneficiaries are, but those are very challenging negotiations. Mm.
Yeah. No, I
determining who are the beneficiaries.
Yeah, I agree. I think I asked if there had been any pushback, and I think the answer I really got was not yet.
Or always.
Yeah, or always. So I will just keep fighting for what is good for the folks of North Dakota. So
I know at SPP there is a lot of disagreement over defining who's the beneficiary and mm-hmm. to what extent of various projects.
Yeah. All right. Well, we could have another great discussion on that, but we're going to move forward with the agenda. We have 17 items on consent and the previous minutes. I move they be approved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay. Moving into the regular agenda, my first item, I move the commission find the formal complaint filed by the North Dakota Public Service Commission advocacy staff on August 17th, 2020, states a prima facie case and serve the complaint on the respondent and Public Service Commission, Northwest Grading Incorporated Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-19-312.
Second.
Okay. This was a complaint, again, it was filed by One Oak. It alleges a violation by Northwest of North Dakota Century Code 49-23-04, which is the one-call excavation notice system, by failing to provide an excavation notice to the center, to the notification center, at least 48 hours before beginning its evacuation. A letter was sent to Northwest, and they did respond in a timely manner to the complaint. And essentially what this is, they were digging, they had a ticket, but for one area, they were digging outside of that area. So in effect, they did not have a ticket for the area in which they were excavating. And as a result, damage did occur. They hit a 14-inch poly natural gas gathering line, a gas gathering line. And while the cost of repair was substantial, right around $13,000, and lost amount of product was $90,000, estimated in terms of gas losses. Anytime a gas line is hit, any facility for that matter, but particularly a gas line being hit or an electrical line, there is a significant risk to the well-being and the safety of those involved, as well as the public overall. So this is a prima facie case, so we'll still have to go through and hear the case out. But that's essentially what the complaint is. I think that would be the detail that would be pertinent to today's discussion.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, the next item, I move the commission find the formal complaint filed by the North Dakota Public Service Commission advocacy staff on August 31st, 2020, states a prima facie case, and serve the complaint on the respondent and Public Service Commission, NC3 LLC, Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-20-095.
Second.
Okay, again, this is a prima facie case, and this involves a complaint from an individual representing Walsh Water Users Incorporated. It alleges a violation, again, of Century Code, the one call notification or excavation notice system, by failing to conduct excavation in a careful and prudent manner. The complaint was received on March 12th, 2020, or on March 2nd, excuse me. On March 12th, the commission staff issued a letter informing NC3 of the complaint, requested a response by March 26th, and as of the end of August, 31st of August, the commission had not yet received a response, although they did speak to an individual at NC3 on the phone on March 24th. Again, 2020, left a voicemail on July 13th, 2020, but have not received a response since then. So this goes back to last September. Personnel provided an excavation notice to North Dakota One Call Center with work to begin on September 10th, 2019. The work was installing fiber optic lines. A water line owned by Walsh was hit. The cost to repair that facility, that water line, was approximately $5,500. It did leave three rural residents without water service for a period of time. And this case, just basic terms, it was failure, again, to conduct in a careful and prudent manner. So they had a ticket. They weren't careful when they approached the marked facility, which includes hand digging, 24 inches on either side of the line. The water line was hit, and that is the complaint, the essence of the complaint that is filed against them, that they weren't careful and prudent in their excavating.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, the third one, BK3, I move the commission find the formal complaint filed by the North Dakota Public Service Commission advocacy staff on August 31st, 2020, states a prima facie case, and serve the complaint on the respondent and Public Service Commission, NC3 LLC, Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-20-096.
Second.
Okay, so this again is with NC3. That is the company that the complaint has been filed against. It is in, this was also in the Grafton area. However, several miles from the previous case, prima facie case that I had just spoken about. So this one's a little different than that, same company, but this involved digging outside of the ticketed area. Again, NC3 did get a ticket, but the area that they stated in the ticket was not where the work was being done. And as a result of that, they were digging outside of the excavated area or excavation area cited in their ticket. They did hit another water line. This one required repair as well, just over $2,000 worth of repair. So, you know, we've had three prima facie cases, including this one now that I've stated at this meeting, and two had tickets, but they extended beyond the ticketed area. And just in general, I think what happens, sometimes areas are overmarked, and it gives the excavator a sense that everything has been surveyed in the next area, that they want to just make a small move, start digging, but it doesn't ensure that all facilities by the various operators have been marked. Sometimes to be safe, they go a little further out. Sometimes they stay within those boundaries. But the ticketed area is the ticketed area. Again, we'll have to hear the case out to make a final determination, but that is the essence of this one.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, BK4, I move the commission adopt the order issuing Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity number 5951 in Dakota Natural Gas LLC, Natural Gas Facilities, Trail County, Public Convenience and Necessity, case number PU-20-244.
Second.
Okay, there will actually be two more items, BK5 and BK6, are both tied to Dakota Natural Gas and a part of this overall process. So some of the remarks will follow. Some will be, that I make now will be all-encompassing to the other two cases in terms of some of the information will be the same, so not to repeat that. This is an exciting case in the sense that it's expanding natural gas service to the communities of Hillsborough, Mayville, as well as providing gas and Mayville, as well as providing gas service to American Crystal Sugar, the plant that is located just to the north of Hillsborough. This is just another great example of providing access to natural gas for North Dakota users to take advantage of. The cost of this system is approximately $8.5 million. Dakota Natural Gas, which is a Minnesota-based company, but will be doing business in North Dakota as a result of this, as well as a similar project that they had in the Drayton area, also tied to the community of Drayton and American Crystal Sugar. They anticipate signing approximately 750 customers in the proposed service territory. The system will have additional capacity available after adding the initial customers for future expansion, and that could very easily include the community of Portland as well. American Crystal Sugar will be a significant user, the anchor account, if you will, in this expansion. They'll be a significant user, but I thought it was interesting. They're not going to replace the use of coal at that facility just to the north of Hillsborough, but the natural gas service will augment the use of gas. So DNG, their estimates are that this will save customers in the Mayville and Hillsborough areas between $500 and $1,000 per year in heating costs, or if they have a hot water heater as well and utilize gas for both of those, I would imagine to a very small extent if they have a gas, other gas appliances, a gas stove, for example. Not going to generate a lot of energy use, but nonetheless an option that these customers will now have if they choose to sign up for service. Businesses will save between 20 and 40% per year on energy use. So it's exciting from a cost savings standpoint. And I thought it was interesting. We had several individuals from the Hillsborough, Mayville area, including Teresa. Boy, if I mess this up, I hope I don't. I think it's Warney. Or maybe it's Warren, states that natural gas service would benefit its expansion and efficiency of operation. She is with American Crystal Sugar. We had Jim Murphy, who is the executive director of the Trail County Economic Development Commission. Very excited about this project as well. And also the mayor of Mayville, Stephen Benson. And he's also the interim vice president of business affairs for Mayville State University. And Mayville State University is committed to at least $100,000 worth of service. If I remember correctly, I don't have that written down, but I think that came out in the informal that we had on this. So the community is extremely excited about receiving natural gas service. Of course, it's up to consumers, households, to decide if they want to invest in retrofitting their furnaces if they have propane heat currently and other appliances in their home. That's ultimately it's up to them, but this is an option that they have available. So I think this is just another a great example. Something similar, of course, very similar, happened in the Drayton area with American Crystal Sugar, as mentioned, and City of Drayton. But even before that, City of Gwinner, the Bobcat facility when MDU extended natural gas service. And I'm trying to think if that was just several years ago, a year and a half ago. Maybe it was 2 years ago now. Time flies. So it goes too fast. It just always does. But I think it's fantastic for the consumers in that part of the world. Commissioner Fedorchuk, comments?
Sure. So this is, like as Brian said, a really big deal for that region, another big deal for the rural communities in the eastern part of the state. It was particularly gratifying to me because I distinctly remember back in 2013 when I was just a new commissioner, I did sort of a run around the state visiting with some of these smaller communities that didn't have natural gas, trying to figure out what are the barriers and how might we be able to address them. At that time, the economic developer in Hillsboro, who I met with, said that they simply cannot compete when it comes to attracting new industrial projects without natural gas. The companies won't even look at them. And so they knew it was a barrier. They knew they had lost out on several projects. But without having a big anchor tenant, it's really hard to cover the costs of the extension, the pipeline extension. And so through the course of two legislative sessions after that, there was a group of us, including some of the utilities, Xcel, MDU, and some other lobbyist-type folks who tried to come up with some different incentives from the state, different programs to incentivize natural gas extension. And Dakota Natural Gas came in the fold from Minnesota because Xcel had worked with them and heard about them. And we brought them in and talked to them about their model. And they made some recommendations for legislation that was approved and passed in the 2015 session, I believe it was. Might have been 2017. And they aren't using that here, but I do think that Dakota Natural Gas then has since really gotten active and brought their model to this part of the state, and now this is their second extension of gas to these rural communities. It's just a huge deal. The mayor and the developer, as Brian said, were part of the hearing that we had with the company, and they have a way of doing it where they can make the investment in the pipeline and get the customers on board and still make it economic for the customers. And I think they might just have a longer-term payout for their capital investments and a number of other things. But our staff has looked over their books and their plans and feels very comfortable that it's a sustainable that it's a sustainable plan. And it's voluntary, so anybody who wants a service can get it. So that's an exciting new option for residents and businesses in that area. And I will say it isn't lost on me that as I travel nationally, all the talk is about electrification and moving away from natural gas. And I am proud to say we're still working actively to extend natural gas to communities in North Dakota because natural gas, the reality is, natural gas usage for industrial processes and for home heating is the most efficient way to use natural gas. There's far less waste. It's more environmentally sound than turning those mechanisms off and using natural gas to generate electricity. It's probably half as efficient. So environmentally, this is a win. And I think we just need to be more vocal about that and not shy away from it. So that's it for me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Commissioner Crisman?
I'll just add to it what you both have already said, the importance of getting natural gas to some of these communities. It does remove a major roadblock. I certainly know because I live between two of the largest communities in the state that do not have natural gas. And so I'm familiar with the roadblocks that not having that service entails. It is important to them. It's also important that when natural gas is brought into an area, that it's done right, both in the planning stages as well as what the tariffs are going to be. And in this case, and the Drayton and Gwinner, we've made sure of that. And Mr. Chairman, kudos to you for the good job of on all three of these cases. I'm going to say it once, of bringing them along in a timely manner so this project can get moving forward. And kudos to you, Commissioner Fedorchak. You've been a trailblazer in making sure these communities know that there are potential opportunities and that it's worthwhile to keep working on them, and that developers like Dakota Natural Gas know that the North Dakota Public Service Commission isn't going to be a roadblock for them. And so, great job, both of you.
You know, I suspect I could be wrong, but I'm thinking that Jim Murphy may be on the phone, the Economic Development Director for I've got to make sure I get the
Trail County.
Yep, for Trail County. I know Jim actually and I work together, so I think Jim has actually only been there for what, 2 or 3 years now. So, but thankfully, you know, we have companies like Dakota Natural Gas, and they really are a niche market specialist. These aren't often targets of some of the larger gas providers and distributors in the region. So I think this is exactly how the process should work, that you have that it's brought forth by the private sector, and as mentioned, that ultimately they have to make sure the economics work. But I think the economics in this particular case, from my perspective, look extremely good, and I think the company has done its homework, so they should be protected from that sense. And I'll get into some of the rates on we've got two more orders to come. But Jim, if you're listening, nice work as well. And he can't respond back, so we have no idea.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay. Here's another related order to this. I move the commission adopt the order in Dakota Natural Gas LLC, Gas Transportation, American Crystal, Sugar Company, Tariff and Rates, case number PU-20-245. Okay, this second. Again is tied to Dakota Natural Gas. This tariff relates to the agreement that DNG, Dakota Natural Gas, will have with American Crystal Sugar. The rates themselves are protected in terms of not disclosing those rates. So they do have trade secret protection. Thank you, Stacy. I was just drawing a blank reel for a moment. But and Commissioner Christman alluded to this, staff looks at that, those rates, and while they're not made public, advocacy staff and staff overall will look at the proposed rates, make sure that residential customers are not, in effect, subsidizing a larger customer like an American Crystal Sugar. So they make sure American Crystal Sugar is paying their fair share in the process, and then when it comes to the final rate, because a company like Dakota Natural Gas will be negotiating rates with different companies out there. Ultimately, those rates have to be approved by the commission, but from a competitive standpoint and negotiating standpoint, that's why that information is protected. But again, staff is extremely thorough to make sure that there's not cross-subsidization taking place in something like this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I'm just going to say, because it's not the case here, but I just as a warning, the kind of thing I like to watch for on these, especially in these smaller communities where things aren't spread out to such a vast area, it is very important that we always make sure that with our tariffs that, for example, a school or a courthouse or something like that doesn't get a very high rate, whereby a community is able to spread the costs out to a lot of people who don't get to participate in the benefits, because those rural residents are not going to be getting the gas delivery service. So that's the kind of thing that I just wanted to emphasize with the tariffs, that we make sure that they're set up so that the people who are benefiting are actually paying, and that it works out correctly.
Great point.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, and the third motion related again to Dakota Natural Gas. I move the commission adopt the order in Dakota Natural Gas LLC, Natural Gas Service, Trail County, tariff case number PU-20-246.
Second.
Okay, this is the tariff as it relates to residential customers, and this is a language change, in effect, is what this would be. These would be the same rates as established for the Drayton customers, which are $16 in terms of a base rate, again, for those households who choose to take service, natural gas service, and then a volumetric charge of $3.77 per MCF, and you know, just as a point of reference, and in a month like July where natural gas usage is very low, a customer may use, and again, a residential customer, average residential, might use 2 MCF. In a very cold month, like January, for example, a customer may use 15, 16, 17 MCF. And roughly speaking, that's the equivalent, generally speaking, of a decatherm, which is a measurement not of volume, but a measurement of heat. MCF is a volumetric measurement, and not to get into that exciting discussion at this point in time, but just to put it in context, it might be $7.50, $8 in the summer in terms of gas used, in addition to the $16. In a month like January, it might be 15, 16, 17 MCF. So then you're going to have a charge in that $50, $60, $65 range for the volume of gas plus the cost of gas itself, which will run between $2.50 and $3 a decatherm, again, which is essentially the same as one MCF, with quality being a little bit of a determining factor in terms of actual heat units received from that MCF. But this gas actually, and one thing in terms of these orders overall, the gas is actually coming off of comes off of the Viking pipeline. It's the same provider as DNG is using for Drayton. The Drayton facility and the Viking pipeline comes out of Canada. So this is actually Canadian natural gas. And the Viking pipeline also serves Grand Forks and Fargo with a different provider as well as Wahpeton, you know, in terms of our service areas. So in a perfect world, this would be Bakken gas. And there are always, I think, companies looking to extend natural gas supplied from the Bakken over to the eastern part of the state. And I know of one such project that's being considered right now. So in a perfect world, we can push Bakken gas to the east. And hopefully that is a possibility in the future.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay. BK7, I move the commission adopt the order and Montana Dakota Utilities Company firm general contracted demand service tariff, case number PU-20-335.
Second.
This is a language change. MDU is proposing a language change to update its firm general contracted demand service tariff. The tariff revisions are intended to clarify contract requirements for Rate 74 and for the applicability of the reservation charge rate 75 for seasonal customers. So these are businesses that could have a backup generator. It could be a customer that is on an interruptible tariff, but might still want another contract, a firm contract for service for a part of their usage. And this also clarifies the rates for seasonal customers as well.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
Okay, my eighth item, I move the commission suspend the rates and I move the commission suspend the tariff and rates in Montana Dakota Utilities Company 2020 natural gas rate increase application case number PU-20-379.
Second.
Okay, this is a part of the process to begin reviewing the case and ultimately make a determination on potential interim rates and ultimately a decision, final decision on the case that's been presented. So this is one of the early steps in the process.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, and my final item, I move the commission suspend the rates and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Otter Tail Power Company Transmission Facility Cost Recovery 2021 rates, case number PU-20-383.
Second.
And this is an annual update that Otter Tail Power is required to file with the commission. In this particular case, again, we're issuing a notice of opportunity for hearing, but what the company is proposing would result in a small decrease of 4 cents per month on their transmission rider. So it's not going to change. If this were to be approved as presented, it would actually go down a very small amount, 4 cents. But going down is seeing a decrease is always better than obviously an increase. So in this particular one, persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by November 7th, 2020. If deemed appropriate, the commission could determine the matter without a hearing. And for more information, individuals can contact the Public Service Commission here at the State Capitol, and our number is 701-328-2400.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
All right, that completes my portfolio. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the commission adopt the order on motion for partial dismissal in Keith and Deanna Kessler versus Minnesota Power, Division of Elite Incorporated, complaint case number PU-20-194.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. This is a complaint on a wind farm that is owned by Elite out west of Bismarck. I think it's called the Bison 4 wind farm by locals. Dates back a good while. Our staff has been working with these folks and the company for a fair amount of time, and some of the things have been addressed and settled, but there are some remaining issues. So the Kesslers filed a complaint this spring with us, and there's been some back and forth between the Kesslers and Elite answering the complaint, et cetera. And so basically what we're doing here is we've looked at all of the items that the Kesslers have asked for in terms of relief, and we're dismissing four of the items with this motion. Those four items are the Kesslers had requested that the commission conduct a survey of other landowners to determine if Minnesota Power has a pattern of misconduct relating to North Dakota landowners. They requested that we prohibit Minnesota Power from any further operations in North Dakota. They requested that we require reimbursement for damages incurred for damage to Section 15, for devaluation of Section 15, as well as personal damages for inconvenience, nuisance, and emotional distress. And they requested that we order Minnesota Power to reimburse all attorney's fees incurred by the Kesslers relating to the prosecution of this action. So basically this stems from a number of issues they had regarding reclamation and the location, most specifically this one, the location of a wind turbine adjacent to their land that the Kesslers believe is too close to a residence that they own. The Kesslers are participants in this wind farm, but they aren't participants in this particular place, the area where the complaint is being discussed. So the commission basically agrees with the Kesslers that it does have power and authority that are not limited as much as the company Elite or Minnesota Power is claiming. However, the certain remedies, the ones I outlined, requested by the Kesslers are beyond a reasonable application of our authority, either our expressed or implied authority. The law expressly provides under which sections the commission may assess damages and attorney's fees. And so to the extent that it was intended for the commission to have authority to prohibit any future operations of Minnesota Power within the state, such authority would have been expressly granted. So the Kesslers' request for surveying for patterns of misconduct is beyond the scope of the matters that the commission intends to hear during the proceeding and would not be conducive to securing a just and expedient determination on the issues presented by the Kesslers. So that basically outlines our response to those four claims. We are proceeding on some of the other issues that they have filed in a complaint, which is not part of this motion today, but just to complete the story, the issues that remain are basically boiled down to two things. Did the company improperly determine that the residence in question was unoccupied? And the second issue is, did the company have information during the siting process or any time before construction that the Kesslers intended to occupy the residence? So you can look for some additional activity regarding those issues in coming weeks. But for now, today's order on outlines a partial dismissal of their complaint and helps to narrow down the issues that will be the focus of this proceeding.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Commissioner Christman?
Yeah, I'll just say this is not one of those dismissals that you sometimes see, especially in courts, where it leaves so little that the case just kind of goes away. There's still a lot of meat on the bone in this complaint case. And I think by eliminating these four requested remedies, we'll be much better able to pinpoint the discussion and the hearing and focus on the remedies that are more appropriate for this particular complaint. So there's a lot of work left to do on this. This is not the major part of the case.
Right.
That's the same point I was going to make. You said it well. This doesn't reduce the merit of the items that are jurisdictional to the commission. the four items being dismissed just simply aren't within our authority, and it's important that we stay within the jurisdictional boundaries the legislature has given and granted the commission, and in effect stay within our regulatory lane. So how those the items being dismissed, if they're pursued in the future, I'm not going to speculate, but I think it's important to underscore the point again that you made, Commissioner Crispin, that the other items are will be given full consideration.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Fedorchak. Commissioner Crispin?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been barely able to contain my exuberance here. I move the commission present the 2020 North Dakota Award for Excellence in Surface Coal Mining and Reclamation to the Coteau Properties Company Freedom Mine.
Second.
Our state reclamation award program sets out criteria for presenting a reclamation award at the Lignite Energy Council's annual meeting. LEC staff have requested that we present this year's award at their virtual fall conference, which is scheduled for September 30th and October 1st next week. I recommend that this year's award be presented to the Coteau Properties Company for their efforts to mine around a significant archaeological site in the West Mine area at the Freedom Mine. Before this was ever permitted, previous cultural resource surveys for the West Mine area identified many significant cultural resource features or sites. One very important such feature is a rock turtle effigy. Native American tribes indicated that the turtle effigy has significant cultural importance for them and requested that it be preserved. So over a decade ago, visionary leaders from Coteau, like Mark Schultz, and from the three affiliated tribes, like their chairman Marcus Levings and Elgin Crowsbreast, who was a cultural resource officer up there, they agreed on a roadmap to effectively mine the coal and enhance access to the important native cultural resources. And now, all these years later, 2020 has marked an important milestone in this process, because a unique mine plan that was developed to maximize recovery of the adjacent federally owned coal while ensuring protection of the culturally significant effigy site, we left a 4-acre hilltop that became an undisturbed island surrounded by mining operations approximately 200 feet below it. The site was mined around in 2020, and backfilling of the empty pit has already begun on three sides of the effigy. Reclamation of the area surrounding the site will include revegetation using traditional native plants. Following the bond release of the surrounding mine lands, and this is key, the turtle effigy will be part of 1,240 acres that was previously privately owned. So unless the owners, you know, specifically allowed it, the public and the tribe did not have access to this land. But this whole 1,240 acres will be donated into the Indian Education Trust. That's capitalized. That's a specific trust, which was created by legislation within the Department of Trust Lands, which is part of the State Land Department, back in 2003, and will be administered to provide funds to tribes for educational projects to perpetuate Native American education. It should be noted that even prior to mining, once Coteau had acquired this property, they immediately then began allowing Native Americans access to the site for ceremonial purposes. And on top of all that, this land, because it's part of the State Land Department, it will be operated, I believe, very similar to school land, where it'll be leased out to someone for ag purposes. I think this will be primarily grazing land. And so it's not being taken out of agricultural use either. It'll be used for agriculture, but because it's state-owned, there's access to it for the tribe, 1,240 acres, to enjoy the and use the cultural resources and then benefit from the revenues. Key leaders of these organizations, like those that I mentioned earlier, and the current leaders like Brian Walther and Sarah Flaff, as well as the men and women that are out in the field accomplishing the tasks, have demonstrated that energy development can happen, and it can actually not just maintain but enhance maintenance and enjoyment of cultural resources and the environment. So I believe that Coteau's efforts to preserve and protect the turtle effigy site is very deserving of the 2020 State Reclamation Award. I will say, specifically to the press, Adam, we're going to have a press release, but I'm not sure of the timing of it because the actual award is kind of presented in conjunction with that virtual meeting next week. We'll make sure that you get a copy of that. There's photos of this and stuff. But we don't have it today because actually we need to do this in a meeting because I'm hoping that I get support here for the for dedicating our award to this specific project. But we actually will present the award in the coming days.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Looks like a great proposal, Randy. I'm glad that you, I think you brought it forward, didn't you, as an idea for this award this year? And
well, it was one of several presented by our outstanding staff.
Awesome. It's really, really a cool project. And the photos photos are amazing.
They really are.
To show the extent to which the mine worked to save this. And when all the land is completely reclaimed, you won't, it won't stand out like it does, but it's really neat to know that that was untouched.
I would imagine that this pending approval, which I always support this, the great work Commissioner Crispin, staff, and the folks at Coteau who made this, this happen. So I think this is the focus.
Well,
yeah.
And, Ms. Chairman, there may be additional photos. I've requested some from the mine that maybe they have something that different angles that are possibly even better. So we'll see what we can develop in the coming days and get it all out in a nice press release.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, my second item, I move the commission conditionally approve revision number 42 to surface coal mining permit number NACT-0401 held by the Coteau Properties Company for the Freedom Mine to identify the next five-year coal removal areas and update mining and reclamation plans and other sections of the permit for the next permit term.
Second.
On March 27th of this year, Coteau filed the application for revision number 42 and the corresponding renewal number 3, which will be the next motion. This renewal and a revision kind of go hand in hand to this permit, since mining is scheduled to continue in the existing permit area until we expect about 2036. The revision identifies the next five-year coal removal area and updates the mining and reclamation plans accordingly. This revision also updates the permit for the next permit term, including introductory information, legal information, business entity compliance information, identification of interests and rights of entry, fish and wildlife resources, general operations plans, surface water management, post-mining land use plans, and the revegetation procedures, establishment, and management plans. The post-mining land use plans were revised with new methodology for replacement of trees and shelter belts. The revision also requests a variance. The mine requested this variance from the contemporaneous reclamation requirements for just 309 acres of this. And the variance was requested because of a topographic adjustment was required due to a change in mining methods of the drag line. So the variance request was properly justified and documented in the revision application, and the Reclamation Division recommends that it be approved. This and other permits at the Freedom Mine are covered by a self and collateral bond combination totaling $146 million. Katoa has indicated that they will be proposing a number of mine plan changes in this and other permits at the Freedom Mine that could affect the worst-case reclamation and cost estimate. With that in mind, a special condition to the revision approval of Katoa, approval to require Katoa to submit an updated reclamation cost estimate by January 1st of 2021 is included. So this revision was considered a significant revision application and was subject to the public notice requirements. Katoa has submitted affidavits of publication of the newspaper notices. We notified the appropriate agencies, affected landowners, and the advisory committee members. We received no comments or objections to this application. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of the revision application and recommends it be conditionally approved with the condition I mentioned, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Next, I move the commission approve renewal number 3 to surface coal mining permit number NACT-0401 held by the Coteau Properties Company for the Freedom Mine to extend the permit term in the existing permit area for another 5 years until September 26, 2025.
Second.
So as I mentioned, this is the renewal that follows the revision we just discussed. It's for 5 years because that's all the longer we do the renewals. But again, back to March 27th, Coteau filed the application for renewal number 3 to continue their operations through September 26th of 2025. This covers all or portions of 13 sections of land in Mercer County, totaling just over 6,070 acres. Coteau has applied for this 5-year renewal because coal operations will continue in this permit area for many years. Coal removal in this area began in 2006 and is planned to continue through 2036. So we expect future renewals again next up in 2026. Coteau has submitted the affidavits of publication for the newspaper notice. We know, again, as I mentioned in the previous one, we notified the appropriate agencies, affected landowners, and advisory committee members of the application. No objections to this renewal application were received. Evidence of adequate performance bond and liability insurance are currently on file. As I mentioned, the amount of bond that currently covers this and the other permit areas is $146 million. Again, the Reclamation Division has completed its review of this 5-year permit renewal, recommends that it be approved, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Now, Mr. Chairman, with such subjects here a little bit, I move the commission adopt the order certifying use of Federal Universal Services Support and Public Service Commission USF Use Certification 47 CFR 54.314. 2021, compliance case number PU-20-311.
Second.
So these are interesting cases for rural telephony and how that all comes together to have that great fiber network providing telecom and internet services around a big part of North Dakota. the Telecommunications Act of 1996, the Federal Telecommunications Act, requires that telecommunications carriers use universal service support that they receive only for the provision, maintenance, and upgrading of facilities and services for which the support is intended. That seems obvious enough. And that the states that desire eligible telecommunications carriers to receive the support pursuant to the high-cost program must file an annual certification with the administrator and the FCC stating that all high-cost support provided was used as intended. So we are the kind of the intermediary of that. On October 28th of 2002, the North Dakota PSC issued an order indicating that the telecommunications carriers providing local exchange service in the state that desire to have PSC certification to the FCC have to file an affidavit with us by approximately September 14th of each year certifying that federal support they receive is used as intended. That's that it has been used and that it will be used as intended. Affidavits regarding use of federal universal service support were filed by 40 companies. Staff recommends we send a copy of each of the filed affidavits to the FCC and the Universal Service Administrative Company, as do I.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And last, I move the Commission adopt the order granting request for auction school course approval in Western College of Auctioneering auction school course approval online application case number AU-20-396.
Second.
So as we discussed in the previous one of these that we've done, an auction school must apply to the PSC to have its courses of study approved for use for North Dakota residents. The in-residence course for Western College of Auctioneering of Bozeman, Montana, is currently unapproved and has been for a long time. On August 17th, Western filed a request for auction school course approval for their online course. To be approved, a course of study must, among other things, I'll emphasize the three big ones, require students to complete at least 60 hours of study in the presence of school instructors who have at least 40 hours under school instructors and at least 40 of those hours under the supervision of a licensed auctioneer who has at least 5 years' experience. The second one is that they provide instruction in ethics, bid calling, sales management, advertising, contracts, accounting and bookkeeping, real estate, appraisals, closing statements, license law, uniform commercial codes, tax collection, bulk sales, and firearms. And thirdly, they maintain a grading system that permits the issuance of diplomas or certificates only to students who successfully demonstrate competence in all required areas of study. So they go through a lot, very intense time frame. Western College of Auctioneering exceeds the required hours and also provided information relating to, with this specific online course, clarification on how the course will meet our requirements, ensuring the integrity of the test instruments, a validation of a student's identity during enrollment, a verification of the student's identity during the course, tracking of a student's attendance and course progress, and their absence and makeup policy. So this online course has been approved in 8 other case states so far. Staff recommends that we approve this course of study for Western College of Auctioneering, and I agree. I think they have come up with a plan here that will meet our requirements and serve North Dakotans who seek to get an auctioneering license well.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Christman. Well, the agenda, the one thing, it just never ceases to amaze me since landing here at the commission. You think of the different things that were covered today, orders that were approved, telecom, pushing out fiber to make North Dakota, as stated numerous times, the leader, national leader in broadband access, pushing out natural gas, extending service to communities that didn't previously have it, coal mine reclamation, just one, an incredible example of sound environmental stewardship and industry doing their job, rates, and a number of other things, the auction, providing a new avenue and increasing access in terms of educational opportunities for people in the auction business. And here's the part that amazes me every day I walk in. It's done with a staff of 42, 43, 44 people. It varies a little bit with some turnover, but one of the smallest staffs in the country that covers arguably a wider swath than any other commission in the country and does it incredibly well. So for staff that is listening, across the board, thank you for everything you do, because this is just one meeting, and in 2 weeks we'll have another line. Frankly, I don't know how they get it all done, but they do in an incredible way. So huge shout out. This is the end result of those efforts, and it's greatly appreciated. Okay, just a couple of quick announcements. We have a work session today. This is on MDU-NSP and Otter Tail deferred accounting for electric and gas. This is a deferred accounting application by each of those. Five different cases, three electric, two gas cases, and this would be to continue the process for COVID-related expenses. So I look forward to that discussion. That's at 1:30 today. Coming up on Monday, September 28th, more areas that the commission is involved with, a formal rules hearing for weights and measures and pipeline safety. That's two cases, GS20-370 and WM20-369. Again, that's Monday, September 28th at 10 a.m. And then our next regular commission meeting is on Wednesday, October 7th at 10 a.m. And that would conclude the announcements. We'll now take a brief recess, take questions from the press, and then we'll probably, in all likelihood, have a short break and then the administrative portion of the meeting. This meeting is now in recess.